Go to Matthew 2. Where this is the beginning of a series on the Sphinx, the stars, and the ancient astrology and Egyptian Book of the Dead and all kinds of mystical stuff. So it's banana stuff. But it all comes back to the idea that there has to be two or three witnesses. We've said any one witness is unreliable. And so this will be, we've studied the witness of the pyramid, we've studied about the witness of the Bible, but we still don't understand it. So the next part of this series, we're going to have a talk about what does the Bible mean? What's the purpose of the Bible? Which is, it sounds like everybody knows it, but nobody knows it. And then the third thing we're doing is what we're doing now, and we're beginning now, is the witness of the stars and the meaning of what these ancient people expected and saw from all societies. But it's something that's not changeable. It's changeable in terms of its courses during the heavens because of the tilt of the earth, but the fact of the stars and their signs don't change too much. Just like the measurements of the stone in the pyramid don't change. The Bible is subject to interpretation. The stars somewhat are subject to interpretation. But we'll see if we can define the ancient roots of the meaning. So Matthew 2. We've got these mystical guys that come from the east at the birth of Christ. But why in the hell did they come? Verse 1, now when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, there came wise men from the east to Jerusalem. That word wise men is a bad translation. In the Greek, it's the word magi, M-A-G-I, and we're going to spend a great deal talking about what historically we know about the magi. It doesn't mean magicians, which is... But we're going to find out who these guys were and what they knew. There came wise men from the east to Jerusalem, saying, where is he that is born king of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east and are come to worship him. When Herod the king had heard these things, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. They were troubled for two reasons. Herod's primary source of trouble is that he was king. He was a puppet king that was set up by the Roman Empire. And it, just like any other king, he didn't want to lose his kingship. He liked his perks. He got a MasterCard and maid. No, he didn't get Louis. So he was concerned about keeping his perks. He didn't want to lose it. Remember that Herod was of the tribe of Edom, which is typifies the flesh. The first Edomites that began to persecute Israel were the Amalekites the moment they left Egypt. And ever since then, the Amalekites or Edom or the Herodites have been persecuting the seed of Christ, just as you do. You are of Herod, you after the flesh. And when he had gathered all the chief priests and scribes of the people together, he demanded of them where Christ should be born. And again, as we've said so often, Christ isn't Jesus' last name. Christ is Messiah. In this time period, it wasn't just the Jews that were expecting Messiah. These guys from the east were expecting Messiah. As we've seen, we haven't seen it yet, but the Egyptian Book of the Dead and the pyramids predicted Messiah. Everything, the whole world was waiting for Messiah. It wasn't a small, isolated event.
So what east is this?
East is, well, we'll find out in a minute, but it's Persia. Okay. The Medes, the Medians. And they said unto him, In Bethlehem of Judea, for thus it is written by the prophet, And thou, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, art not the least among the princes of Judah, for out of thee shall come a governor that shall rule my people Israel. It's a prophecy from Isaiah, and it says, a more fulfillment of that, it says, the government shall be on his shoulders. Now, what government? That's the mystery. You know, it's easy for us, easy for man to ascribe, well, he meant that was the government of Israel, or the government of the United States, or the government of Dallas. But the true meaning is that the government of you shall be on his shoulders. It's not optional. You don't have a choice to choose Jesus as your personal Savior. That's bullshit. Jesus, the government of all men, is on the shoulders of Jesus Christ. The meaning of this act of Messiah being revealed in the land of Judea that was prophesied by Balaam, that was prophesied by the Sphinx, that was prophesied by the stars, that was prophesied by the pyramid, that was prophesied by the Egyptian Book of the Dead, that was hoped for in the Book of Vedas, that was talked about in the Bhagavad Gita. It was a universal cosmic event. It's not a religion. We got to get that through your heads. You don't have any choices. I'm getting a little bit of a picture. Then Herod, when he had privily called the wise men, inquired of them diligently what time the star appeared. That's a hell of a thing for a king to do. He's calling these guys, these little wise men that you see hunched over with little dealies and little, and they're giving gifts to Jesus in the thingy. These guys were big, heavy dudes. They were important. And the king of Judea, they were so important that the king called them in as his counselors. And he sent them to Bethlehem and said, Go and search diligently for the young child, and when you have found him, bring me word again that I may come and worship him also. When they had heard the king, they departed. And lo, the star which they saw in the east went before them till it came and stood over where the young child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced with exceeding great joy. Now, that doesn't make any sense. Except it will in a minute. And when they were come into the house, they saw the young child with Mary his mother and fell down and worshipped him. And when they had opened their treasures, they presented unto him gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And being warned of God in a dream that they should not return to Herod, they departed into their own country another way. And when they departed, behold, the angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream, saying, Arise and take the young child and his mother, and flee into Egypt. And be thou there until I bring thee word, for Herod will seek the young child to destroy him. And when he arose, he took the young child and his mother by night and departed into Egypt. And there was, and was there until the death of Herod, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken of the Lord by the prophet, saying, Out of Egypt have I called my son. That prophecy never changes. Out of Egypt you have been called. Out of the world you have been called. The act of Herod trying to kill the son never changes. Your very being, your very thoughts, your very ideas about life are as wicked as Herod's in attempting to crucify and to kill the child. And not only will you try to kill him in your all-consuming self-seeking, you'll kill all. Then Herod, when he saw that he was mocked of the wise men, was exceeding wroth and sent forth and slew all the children that were in Bethlehem and in all the coasts thereof, from 2 years old and under, according to the time which he had diligently inquired of the wise men. Then was fulfilled that which was spoken by Jeremiah the prophet, saying, In Ramah was there a voice heard? Rama's another word for Bethlehem. Lamentation and weeping and great mourning, Rachel weeping for her children, and they would not be comforted, because they were not. And when Herod was dead, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt, saying, Arise and take the young child and his mother, and go into the land of Israel, for they are dead which sought the young child's life. And he arose and took the young man, the young child and his mother, and came into the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus did reign in Judea in the room of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there, notwithstanding, being warned of God in a dream, he turned aside into the parts of Galilee. And he came and dwelt in a city called Nazareth, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by the prophets, he should be called a Nazarene. Now, tradition has it that Christ, Nazareth is, I'm not going to go where Nazareth, you don't mind. But anyway, he took the coastal route, Joseph did, and they took this route, or they didn't go this way, it's a dumb way to go. But they went this way along the coast, and they ended up at On, which is today called Heliopolis, and it was the place of all of the great learning. And he supposedly stayed that this, that he didn't, allegedly didn't die for like 10 years. I mean, it was almost, Jesus was like 11 when he went back. Okay? Now, who were these wise men that came and offered Jesus gifts? And how in the hell did they know? And what was this star? And what does the Sphinx have to do with all of this? Well, let's see if we can unravel the mystery. There's the ancient historian Herodotus, which is no relation to Herod. Herodotus says that the Magi were a Median, or a tribe of Persia, the Medes and the Persians that were the same, as you all know. Now under Cyrus, Cyrus was a prophesied Christ type who, through his good offices, the temple was rebuilt. You remember? Okay, well, under Cyrus, they were given priestly functions and became the high priests of the Medes, or Persians. And not just the high priests, but they were like the tribe of Levi to the Jews. Do any of you know who Zoroaster was?
I should.
Huh?
I studied the
kind. Okay, Zoroaster founded a religion or a way of thinking called Zoroasterism that was massively prevalent for hundreds and hundreds of years throughout all of the known world. They sent missionaries out. It was a mystery religion. But Zoroaster founded the sacred book of the Persians, or wrote it. It was called the Avesta, or Zend Avesta, just like in the Bhagavad Gita is the sacred books, and the Vedas for the Far East, well, and the Bible for us, and the Quran for Islam. The Avesta was the sacred book for the Persians. Now, the Persians, you remember, were one of the four great empires that were predicted, and one of the four great empires under which the known world was under control of. It was the Babylonians, the Persians or the Medes, the Greeks, and then the Romans. I'm not communicating here.
Yeah.
I am?
Yeah.
Okay. The Magi were missionaries. Now, there's records of them being expelled from Rome as early as 139 BC. Many of them were charlatans, but they influenced many, many ancient leaders, including Plato himself. Plato's writings are full of the theories of the Avesta and the Zoroaster. Now, under they believed a whole lot of interesting stuff, and I won't bore you with all what they believed. But they believed in the bodily resurrection of the dead. They believed in personal angels and demons. They believed in a bodily Messiah. Their function was to guard what was called the sacred fire. They recited hymns at dawn, and they offered sacrifices of fruit and flowers. They didn't like any of those bloody sacrifices. They were granted extensive estates in Persia. And over the years, hundreds and hundreds of centuries, they gained a reputation for magic art and incantation and interestingly enough. But before the Persians, well, you understand that I won't go into that here. This is complicated, so bear with me. The idea of dualism is the greatest enemy of Christianity. It's the greatest enemy of Israel. Because two can exist. And dualism means that there's good and there's evil. And the two gods are competing. And so the Christian, modern Christian church, and to a great extent modern meaning last few hundred years, the modern Israeli Jewish church or thinking is influenced by Zoroasterism. It's the idea of dualism, that there's a first cause and a second cause. Do you understand what I'm saying?
No.
Okay. You, all of us, have so grown up in an environment that we are ingrained to think as this influence of Zoroaster, for the first time in history, caused us to think. We are still feeling his influence. And that influence says that there are good things happen to us and there are evil things happen to us, and they come from two different sources. I don't care how much I preach to you, every time something happens to you that you perceive as negative, you can't believe it's God. Well, the reason you can't believe it's God is because of the influence of these magi. God says, I am the Lord, there is none else. I form the light, I make darkness, I form peace, I create evil. I, the Lord, do all these things. There is none else, that you may know from the rising of the sun until the east, until the west, there is no God but me. And the reason that's so important is monotheism is the rarest thing in the universe. Belief in one God. Modern Christianity believes in two, but they can't. Your mind won't permit two, because two is a mystically impossible number. If there is two, then there automatically will be many. So modern Christianity, modern religion, believes God, Satan, and then United States family, ad nauseum. You remember that? We haven't studied it recently, but do you any remember the first words of the Shema? Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one God. The Shema was recited in Israel before any of the scriptures were ever read as the constant reminder that there was only one. There wasn't God first in your life and then this, second, and third. It was God only. There wasn't a first cause and then a second cause and a third cause and a fourth cause in a philosophical framework. There was only one cause. There wasn't God and then Oli, then Louis. There was only God. Now, I can't give you enough emphasis on the importance of you seeing through this Zoroastrian influence to the idea that there is one God and only one cause and only one source. Otherwise, you will walk through life being constantly deceived. Okay? Now, that is the primary influence of Zoroaster. And the Medes, when the Medes, you remember the Babylonian influence, then the Greek influence, I mean, then the Mede influence, then the, for, there was first the Egyptian. We gotta go back to Daniel. You gotta see Daniel's dream. 2:26. Okay, the king, Nebuchadnezzar, had a dream. Everybody find it? And he made this big deal. Daniel, as all of Israel, was in the diaspora. They had been, because of their own garbage, they had been driven from the land. They were driven from the promise. They were driven from the rest by God that they might return to the rest in total knowledge. And Daniel was a bright guy. And we'll see he had tremendous influence. But Daniel had a reputation for being a seer. He's never called a prophet. Okay. Daniel, in chapter 2, verse 19, then was the secret revealed unto Daniel in a night vision. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Daniel answered and said, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his and his alone. In Hebrew, there's a concept of exclusivity. If I say in Hebrew that wisdom and might are his, in English, you just, well, wisdom and might are his. You know, that's nice, children, just don't fight. And in God, it's, I mean, in Hebrew, it's wisdom and might are exclusively his. That's why it says trust, when it says trust God. Okay, well, that's nice, children. But we just say, well, I trust God for my life after death. The word and the tense and everything else in Hebrew and Greek demand that you trust God and no one else and nothing else. So wisdom and might are exclusively his. He changeth the times and the seasons. He removeth kings and setteth up kings. He giveth wisdom unto the wise and knowledge to them that know understanding. Now, look at that. Jesus talked about that verse. He giveth knowledge to them that know understanding. Now, one of those words is he giveth revelation to them that know understanding. Now, Jesus used that and said to whom, if you have just a little bit and you don't use it, then even that which you have is taken away from you. If you have a lot and it's used meaning given out, then that which you have will be given to you in much, much more abundance. And the key to it is, you're speaking it. That's the only way it's used. If you have just a little bit and you keep it, you're going to lose what you got. Because you're in the antithesis of the mystery of the universe, which is outflow. If you sit there and dwell on it, afraid you're going to make a mistake, then God says you're going to lose the little bit that you have. God didn't give a flip. There's no such thing as a mistake. You can do nothing against the truth. But again, because of Zoroaster, he just emphasized the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, you will always want to be right. Do you understand? See how, I mean, it's all ties together. He revealeth the deep and secret things. Now, see that, I love that kind of stuff. I love deep and secret things. And I get the biggest charge that I can ever get when I find one of them out, when it's revealed. And that charge is 10,000 times more than anything that you can imagine. Including orgasm. He revealeth the deep and secret. That's the only reason you're alive, is to find out the deep and secret things.
Amen.
Because as you find those things out, you're renewed in your mind, and then you're on the course for the one singular objective, to be transfigured. Not to be nice people, that's boring. You're not nice anyway. He revealeth the deep and secret things. He knoweth what is in the darkness, and the light dwelleth with him. Well, that's kind of neat. If the light dwelleth with you, it's impossible for you to ever be in darkness. Remember, this antagonism, dialectic, is the yin and the yang. All these things reveal the same thing. They don't reveal good and evil, which is what the Western mind, through the influence of Zoroaster and others, have said. They reveal the arena in which the antagonism takes place. But you lock in on the good or on the evil, and you miss the mystery. So starts. I mean, stop seeing good. Stop seeing evil. Don't even call Jesus good. There's nothing good but the Father. Okay. I thank thee and praise thee, O thou God of my fathers, who hast given me wisdom and might, and hast made known unto me now what we desired of thee. For thou hast now made known unto us the king's matter. Now he's talking about the dream, but it's also, again, I'm convinced Jesus was speaking of this when he said, unto you it is given to know the mysteries of the kingdom of God, not unto them. For unto them, unto those that are without, all things are in parables. Parable isn't a good thing unless you understand it. Parable, if you don't understand the parable, it's like you just flushed down the toilet a 50-carat diamond ring. That's why faith without knowledge is no faith. That's why in truth, from the spiritual standpoint, faith and knowledge are synonymous. That's why the promise of this is that if you are a spiritual man or woman, you will understand all things. But you will be understood of no one. Okay? This is all preamble stuff. So. Therefore Daniel went in unto Arioch, whom the king had ordained to destroy the wise men of Babylon. You got to read the whole book of Babylon the book of Babylon. Most of you have been living the book of Babylon. Now read the book of Daniel. He went and said thus unto him, destroy not the wise men of Babylon. Bring me in before the king, and I will show unto the king the interpretation. Then Arioch brought in Daniel before the king in haste, and said, you better believe he brought him in haste. And said thus unto him, I have found a man of the captives of Judah that will make known unto the king the interpretation. The king answered and said to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, I can't pronounce his name, Belteshazzar, art thou able to make known unto me the dream which I have seen and the interpretation thereof? Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, the secret which the king hath demanded cannot the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, the soothsayers, show unto the king. But there is a God in heaven that revealeth secrets, and maketh known to the king Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days. The dream and the visions of thy head upon thy bed are these. As for thee, O king, thy thoughts came into thy mind upon thy bed, what should come to pass hereafter. And he that revealeth secrets maketh known to thee what shall come to pass. But as for me, this secret is not revealed to me for any wisdom that I have more than any living, but for their sakes that shall make known the interpretation to the king, and that thou mightest know the thoughts of thy heart. Thou, O king, sawest, and behold, a great image. Now, see, at this point, the king had never told anybody what he had dreamed, even. He was expecting the wise men to, first of all, tell him what he had dreamed, and then tell him what the dream meant. So that's a pretty difficult assignment. Thou, O king, sawest, and behold, a great image. The great image, whose brightness was excellent, stood before thee, and the form thereof was terrible. The image head was of fine gold, and his breast, and his arms of silver, and his belly, and his thighs of brass, his legs of iron, his feet a part of iron and a part of clay. Thou sawest till that a stone was cut out without hands, which smote the image upon his feet that were of iron and clay, and brake them to pieces. Then was the iron, the clay, the brass, the silver, and the gold broken to pieces together, and become like the chaff of the summer threshing floors. And the wind carried them away, that no place was found for them, and that the stone that smote the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. This is the dream, and we will tell the interpretation thereof before the king. Thou, O king, art a king of kings, for the God of heaven hath given thee a kingdom, power, and strength, and glory. And wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field and the fowls of heaven, hath he given unto thine hand, and hath made thee ruler over them all. Thou art this head of gold. And after thee shall arise another kingdom inferior to thee, and another third kingdom of brass, which shall bear rule over all the earth. And the fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, for as much as iron breaketh in pieces and subdueth all things, and as iron that breaketh all these, shall it break in pieces and bruise. And whereas thou sawest the feet and toes part of the potter's clay and part iron, the kingdom shall be divided. But there shall be in it of the strength of the iron, for as much as thou sawest the iron mixed with miry clay. And as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. And whereas thou sawest iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. And in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. And the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. For as much as thou sawest that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that break in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great God hath made known to the king what shall come to pass hereafter. And the dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof sure. Now, who are these kingdoms? The gold is, in this type, we just said it was, the gold is Nebuchadnezzar, which is Persia. Okay, who's the next?
The gold head was the image interpreted as Babylon. Okay? And then the breasts of arms and silver represented the kingdom that followed Babylon, the kingdom of the Medes and Persians.
Okay.
The belly and thighs of brass stood for Greece.
Okay.
The fourth kingdom, the legs and feet, was Rome.
That's right. Okay, my point to you, though, is that the stone that was cut out of the mountain without hands destroyed all of those kingdoms. You understand? From a spiritual standpoint, there are no more kingdoms. The only kingdom that was left at the moment that stone destroyed it was the kingdom of the bride or the kingdom of the whore. That's the only two that's left. And all the prophecies that these idiots talk about, you know, well, it's going to come out of the Antichrist, is going to come out of Rome, and he's going to, that can't be right. Dan, if that's like they use the same logic to say that the 3.5 weeks of Daniel are going to happen someday in the future. My point to you is that the only kingdom you're living in, and the lesson of this, is that you're either living in the kingdom of Christ and you're a vessel of mercy, you're no longer self-seeking, or you're in the kingdom of Babylon, the Antichrist, which is the spiritual Babylon, the whore, and you're a vessel of self-seeking. Those are the only two left. It doesn't matter what name you give yourself. But I want you to see that Daniel saw the end. Just as he saw the end of the 70 weeks, now he saw the end with the stone cut without hands, destroying all of the kingdoms as chaff. Okay? Okay. Now, we're back to the Magi's, and we'll see their connection here in a minute with what we just read. They also studied astrology and astronomy, learned from Babylon. Sargon's settlement of Israelites in Media, which was before this, that happened in 730, and it's in 2 Kings, verse chapter 17. That's when they were all transferred there, that's how they got here. You understand that? Accounts for the large amount of ancient Hebrew thought from the Zohar in the Avesta. And that's why the Zohar is the source book for the Avesta, which is the ancient Dili for the Persians and the Medes. The Median astronomers would expect Messiah and know of Balaam's prophecy of the star out of Jacob. Now remember, we're trying to figure out why these three magi travel from Media, which is a long ways away. I mean, we're talking, you know, a couple, maybe 1,500 miles from where they were. Why would they come? Would you do that? Would you go and see a little baby?
They felt commanded. If they were that much in touch with God's word, okay, then they almost would not even appear to be a choice.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see something else about these guys. Let's go to Acts 13. We're going to read 4 through 13. So they, being sent forth by the Holy Ghost, departed unto Seleucia, and from thence they sailed to Cyprus. And when they were at Salamis, they preached the word of God in the synagogues of the Jews. And they had also John to their minister. And when they had gone through the isle unto Paphos, they found a certain sorcerer, a false prophet, a Jew whose name was Bar-Jesus, which was the deputy of the country, Sergius Phallus, a prudent man, who called for Barnabas and Saul and desired to hear the word of God. But Elymas the sorcerer, for so is his name by interpretation, withstood them, seeking to turn away the deputy from the faith. Then Saul, who was also called Paul, filled with the Holy Ghost, set his eyes on him and said, O full of all subtlety and all mischief, thou child of the devil, thou enemy of all righteousness, wilt thou not cease to pervert the right ways of the Lord? And now behold, the hand of the Lord is upon thee, and thou shalt be blind, not seeing the sun for a season. And immediately there fell on him a mist and a darkness, and he went about seeking some to lead him by the hand. Then the deputy, when he saw what was done, believed, being astonished at the doctrine of the Lord. Now, tradition has it that this Jew was a missionary of the Medes. And he was teaching the book of Avesta with the Torah as a part of the doctrine. Okay? Now, as I said, they studied astrology and astronomy. Astronomy, that's good, astronomy. Now, the Roman historian Tacitus and another Roman called Suetonius, they have great writings and tell how widespread in the East at the time of Christ was the expectation that, quote, at that time, men starting from Judea, a man starting from Judea would become master of all things. This is what was expected by the world. I mean, since the Jews had been in the diaspora in Babylon, in Persia, all over the place, they had shared with the wise men who were diligent, and they knew the prophecies. And they knew the stars, as we'll see in a minute. Ancient tradition says that Zoroaster, in secular literature, his name is Zerdhust, was a pupil of Daniel. Okay? and that he predicted to the Magians that when they should see a new star appear in the constellation Virgo, it would notify the birth of the mysterious child whom they were to adore, who would bring an end to all things. Now we're beginning to see why these three wise men who were magi, who were of this organization and religion founded by Zoroaster, who tradition, and not just one, many, many traditions, say that Zoroaster was a student of Daniel. And it says here that Daniel was learned in all of the arts of Babylon and Persia. We see now how the possibility that this group of magi had learned all these mystical secrets. Remember the meaning? Remember how we've studied before how they brought in, how Abraham brought in the knowledge of mathematics and astronomy, and how the various forms of geometry that have been ascribed to Euclid and to Pythagoras. Pythagoras was the great mystic who formed the concepts that we now, the solid concepts of solid geometry, which permit us to have things that we have. But ancient tradition says that they all learned that from Abraham. Now, this isn't only Jewish tradition. Okay? Now, so that a star would appear in the constellation Virgo, a new star, and it would notify them of the birth of a mysterious child whom they were to adore, who would bring an end to all things. That's from the Avesta. Now, have any of you ever looked? This is a can you see it at all?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The center of this is the pole star, which is now Polaris. Okay? And all of the constellations and all of what we know as the universe move from our perspective, it appears that they move around the Earth. Obviously, what's going on is the Earth is circling, going in a circle, which causes one of the cycles, and then the Earth is going around the Sun, which is causing another cycle, then the Sun is going through this cycle, which is calling a third cycle. Well, this is how the concept of the zodiac was made, is that by observation from the Ancient of Times, men noticed when certain stars appeared and what they gave figures to. And you all know about the astrology tables and all that. And they go, you know, from Capricorn, all of you know what your sign is. Nobody cares what your sign is. That's the point. That the idea of this, of you having a sign, is a brand new invention in history. In ancient history, the purpose of the zodiac was to reveal why you were alive. Not you as an individual, why the human race was here. Then it was perverted to show the prophecy concerning kings of the nations. Then it was further perverted to show, well, what am I going to do today? Or what shall I buy stock today? Or shall I get married in this day? Or, you know, but its original meaning was all the way back that it showed the mystery of life. Now, we see, you know, there's 12 major constellations. Each constellation has there are 12 major signs of the zodiac. Each of those 12 signs have three constellations that are part of them. So there's a total of 36 different things to study when you study the stars. It's not just the 12 signs of the zodiac. Okay? Now, we're not going to be able to get into this very much today, but I want us to concentrate on why the Magi came to Jerusalem. All right.
We have a question. Did you say that the holy book of Zoroastrianism,
which is the Avesta,
within that book, it said that the Magi would follow a star that would appear in Virgo, and
right.
that star would lead them to the child who would bring it into all things.
Right.
That is in the writings of Zoroaster.
It's in the book called Zend Avesta.
And Zoroaster wrote that book?
Well, he's attributed to, he was the founder of that religion.
Yeah.
And it's attributed to him that he wrote it. I mean, it's attributed that he wrote it. Obviously, it's been amended and changed, and they haven't found a great part of it. They've only small parts of the Avesta have been found. Okay, now, the question is, we've got all of these signs, the 12 signs of the zodiac, which are the major signs in this circle of the heavens. The question is, where do you start? If you want to try to reveal... This pattern is constant. I mean, the universe and the world and your position in the world, you just keep going around and around and around. And remember, these guys used to live 800 years. And they were out in the desert. They had no television, no radio. I mean, what they did for entertainment is they watched the stars. And over a period of 800 or 900 years, they got to be pretty good at it. Right?
Seen all the MASH episodes.
That's a good point. Right. And with the modern zodiacal tables, they start with Aries, the ram. But that's, again, a new invention. In the temple of Esna in Egypt, and in the ceiling of it are the signs of the zodiac. On that temple, which is from way before Christ, it shows the Sphinx with the head of a woman and the body of a lion, and it clearly shows that they are the reason for the Sphinx. The reason the Sphinx exists is so that it could be forever a guide to show you that you start in the 12 signs of the zodiac, you start with the woman and you end with the lion. Now you've heard me say that before. But you can't believe how important that is and how difficult it would be to know that, to unravel this mystery. So, again, if we are right, the Sphinx was the pre-flood. And in the pre-flood, they knew this. And so they wanted to preserve the mysteries, as we talked about from when we studied the pyramid. Now...
I don't understand what difference it would make where it started.
Well, you will when you see this, because you'll see each. We're going to start going through each one of these, and if because it started I'll tell you the difference. Go to Isaiah 7. Verse 14. You read it. Somebody.
Verse 14.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, the Lord himself shall give you a sign. Behold, a virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and shall call his name Emmanuel. Butter and honey shall he eat.
Okay, that's enough. The virgin, Virgo, shall conceive and bear a son. Now go to Revelation 5:5. So, I mean, that you had to start at the virgin.
Okay.
Revelation 5:5. Huh?
Well, Linda never looked at this yet.
Somebody read it.
5:5. Mm-hmm. One of the elders saith unto me, weep not. Behold, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the Root of David, hath prevailed to open the book and to loose the seven seals therefore.
Okay. Now the whole book of Revelation is about the unloosing of the mystery. The tribe of Judah, the Lion of Judah, one from that tribe is the only one that's permissible, the Lion of Judah. So the beginning with the Virgo, ending with the Lion, that is the beginning and the end of the mystery. And you travel a circle of the sun to find it out. Now, it's going to take us a long time, but it'll blow your mind when you see what each one of these constellations mean and what these decans that are the attendant to the signs, how they attribute to that full meaning. And we're going to just do one of them tonight because it refers directly to the the Magi and what they saw. Now, the first constellation in the sign of Virgo, or the Virgin, it shows that she will have a child. And because of the ancient name of it, the name of that child will be the desire of all nations. Now, I want you to see something. This is, we got to find Virgo here. This gets complicated. Well, we have to go to this one. Now, pass this around. Okay, now also, in all of ancient mythology, to the right means towards God, to the left is away from God. And I don't know if I get into that with you in the pyramid. The idea that if it was, when it went descending, it was away from God, ascending was towards God, to the right, towards God, light towards God, darkness toward the pit. But it's all of life is a process of moving from left to right. Now, to the right, on the right, and we'll study this in great detail. In the one hand, the Virgin, Virgo, is holding a branch. In the other hand, she's holding a stalk of wheat. Exactly to her right, which is a decan of the sign of Virgo, is a woman holding a child on her lap. And I want you to see, this is the ancient signs show. But pass that around. You see, directly to the, this is Virgo, to the right of Virgo is the woman holding the child. Okay, now that, what you're looking at is the way the map, the star map was drawn from 2000 BC. That's what this is. If you looked at that today, what they use today, that star map would show, because of the Greek astronomer Ptolemy, that star map would show that instead of the woman holding a child, it would be the wig of a woman. And I'll tell you about that in a minute. But these ancient star maps have been perverted by kings through the centuries. Whether they've been perverted on purpose or not is a matter of conjecture. But fortunately, from the ancient, from archaeology, these ancient star maps are still available. So I'm not too interested in what the signs of the zodiac mean today. I want to know what they meant when they were invented. Okay? Now, the ancient name for that constellation, which is the first deca of the sign of Virgo, is Coma, C-O-M-A-H. It's a Hebrew name which means the desired or the longed for. And it's only used twice in the scriptures. It's in Haggai 2:7 and Psalm 63:1. And so let's go there real quick. I want to show you something. Okay, somebody go to Psalm 63. Read verse 1 for a while.
Okay. O God, thou art my God, early will I see thee. My soul thirsts for thee, my flesh longeth for thee in the dry and thirsty land where no water is. To see thy power and thy glory, so as I have seen thee in the sanctuary. Because I.
That's enough. The word longeth there is the Hebrew word coma, which was the ancient name of this
lady and baby.
Lady and baby, the coma. It's the first decan of the constellation, of the sign of Virgo. Okay, in Haggai, for thus saith the Lord of hosts, yet once, it is a little while, and I will shake the heavens and the earth and the sea and the dry land, and I will shake all nations, and the desire of all nations shall come. And I will fill this house with glory, saith the Lord of hosts. So again, the point is, the first act at the right-hand side of the Virgin holding the branch, which we'll get into next time, because the branch is the... Where the hell did that word come from? Well, through what does branch mean? Well, nobody knows, except that all of the prophecies about Christ are connected to the branch. Well, it's because Virgo is holding the branch in her right hand. And the first constellation is now the child sitting on the mother's knee, or standing on it. That's what the stargazers saw. That's what the magi knew. They saw that that child sitting on the knee with the desire of all nations, the star of Bethlehem, was in that constellation Coma. It was a new star. And we'll see what that means more in a minute. Okay, as I said, now these, for all of this, this star, this child sitting on the, I mean, being held by the mother, by Virgo, was from the ancient star pictures all the way back to Babylon. Okay? A guy named Abu Mashr, who was an 8th century Arabian astronomer, said, quote, "There arises in the first decan a young woman, as the Persians, Chaldeans, and Egyptians teach, a young woman whose Persian name denotes pure virgin, sitting on a throne, nourishing an infant boy, having a Hebrew name by some nations called Ihesu, which in the Greek is called Christos." Okay? Now, the picture, this little picture, is not what you see now in the modern maps of the stars. What you see now is a woman's wig. You say, why is there a woman's wig there? I'll tell you why there's a woman's wig there. Bernice was the wife of Ptolemy III, the king of Egypt, in the 3rd century B.C. Ptolemy went out in a battlefield. And she loved him dearly, so the story goes. And she had, her hair was her pride. It was allegedly down below her waist, and it was beautiful hair and all that. She vowed that if the gods brought her husband back safely, that she would consecrate her fine head of hair to Venus if her husband returned from battle. Well, he returned from battle. She shaved her head. This is the queen of Egypt. She shaved her head and hung the hair in the temple to Venus. It got stolen. Now, to comfort her, a man named Conan.
No.
C-O-N-A-N. C-O-N-A-N. He was the prime number one key astronomer to the court in Alexandria. Gave it out that Jupiter had taken it and made it a constellation. Therefore, he did it for another interesting reason. Up till that time, the name of that decan was Coma. So he made the Egyptian word kome, which is hair, and translated it, and that became transferred to the Latin Coma, and thus Coma Bernice comes down to us today as the name of that constellation.
It's to satisfy the pride of the Queen of Egypt.
Right.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. That's a woman's wig instead of the Blessed One, the desire of all nations. But that's the perfect example of what all things that God has revealed are, how they're polluted. Now, the ancient Egyptian name was Sheshnu, Sheshnu, and that means the desired son. The zodiac in the Temple of Dendera in Egypt, going back at least 2000 BC, shows this woman with child. So Shakespeare, in his work Titus Andronicus, speaks of an arrow being shot up into heaven to the, quote, good boy in Virgo's lap. So even Shakespeare studied the ancient. He didn't pay attention to what Ptolemy had done. Now, based on the Avesta and all kinds of other stuff, which I don't want to bore you with, it shows that the new star appeared in coma. A new star appeared in coma, which was the star of Bethlehem that the Magi followed. So now, new stars are not unknown. There's one major one. It appeared in 125 BC. The star was so bright as to be seen in the daytime. It suddenly appeared, and this caused Hipparchus to draw up his catalog of the stars, which Ptolemy then handed down. Ptolemy was credited with it, but he was the first one in what's called the AD guys to draw up a map of the stars. But it was because of this new star which appeared overnight. Whap!
How could they follow a star?
We're about to get to that. Okay, now, the always starting back in Babylon through Persia, this prophecy, and I think it may have been amplified by Daniel in his teaching to Zoroaster, the prophecy about this star that was going to appear in the sign of Virgo in the constellation Coma, it was carefully preserved that the new star would appear in this sign when he whom it foretold should be born. Now, let's go to Numbers 24. Is this interesting to you?
Numbers 24?
Yeah. Now this is Balaam, who was a Gentile. He's foretelling the happiness of Israel. In verse 14, it says, "And now behold, I go unto my people. Come therefore, and I will advertise thee what this people shall do to thy people in the latter days." And he took up his parable and said, "Balaam the son of Beor hath said, and the man whose eyes are open hath said. He hath said, which heard the words of God, and knew the knowledge of the Most High, which saw the vision of the Almighty, falling into a trance, but having his eyes open. I shall see him, but not now. I shall behold him, but not near. There shall come a star out of Jacob, and a scepter shall rise out of Israel, and shall smite the corners of Moab, and destroy all the children of Sheth. And Edom shall be a possession, Seir also shall be a possession for his enemies, and Israel shall do valiantly. Out of Jacob shall come he that shall have dominion, and shall destroy him that remaineth of the city." So that prophecy was Balaam's prophecy. It concerned the star, the scepter, and dominion. Now, I want you to think about this. First of all, they would have, because Israel had been in the diaspora in the land of Media, they and the wise man would have been fascinated with this kind of stuff. Then they would have been well familiar with it. And they would have been well familiar of the whole process of what we will see were the ancient star maps. Now, so the new star, you have to pretend you're Daryl for a minute. A new star would show the latitude. Now the reason is that the star, the ancient way of doing it was the star had to have showed a latitude only in the star maps at a particular time. Normally it was at midnight. The star, the new star that's exploding over there in the west, because they're from the east, would show the latitude. And the latitude would be defined by the point. Latitude is the
longitude.
Huh?
You mean longitude, don't you?
No. It would show the latitude.
Where around the world or this way around the world?
This way. It would show the latitude, and it would show the latitude of where it would have to be the zenith of that, if you'd have to be standing directly under that star and see it at the point. Do you understand? The zenith. The prophecy would show the longitude, because it was out of Jacob. So for the Magi, it was a relatively easy task. They traveled west until to the land of Jacob, and they moved to the point where, with their instrumentation, the zenith of the new star was directly over them. And it wouldn't matter whether it was midnight or not, but that's when they meet, because it wouldn't change that much. But it would see it. Do you understand? But it's a particular measurement. It would only occur in a relatively small arena. Longitude, the prophecy. Latitude, the new star. Fish?
Really?
Yeah.
They knew about latitude and longitude.
Oh.
Sure.
Yeah.
But it showed an exact question.
Well, we're going to show. We're going to see this. Watch this.
So they had instruments.
Oh, yeah.
Like they navigated, too. So following the star, they navigated by the star.
Right. The same way that you would navigate an airplane today. Now, there's a great story which makes this come alive. Go back to Matthew. I love these little stories. Matthew 2.
How small an area would they be able to define?
Just wait a minute. They'd be able to define a very small area. Once they, because they went, that's what they went to Jerusalem. Let's read what we just read, and we'll read it again with this in mind. Matthew 2. Now when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, there came wise men from the east to Jerusalem. Okay? They're trying to get it down to the saying, where is he that is born king of the Jews? For we have seen a star in the east. From the east, and are come to worship him. When Herod the king had heard these things, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And when he had gathered all the chief priests and scribes of the people together, he demanded of them where Christ should be born. Now, Herod is a non-Jew. But Herod gets the Jewish mystics together and says, where is Messiah coming from? We got this other guy over here. We're going to have, now, do we have two witnesses? We got the star, and we got book. They said unto him, in Bethlehem of Judea, for thus it is written by the prophet. And up in anyway, gone and on. We just read that. So now they are Bethlehem. They're in Judea, they're in over the latitude, and they're in Bethlehem. Go down. In verse 9, and when they had heard the king, they departed, and lo, the star which they saw in the east went before them, till it came and stood over where the young child was. Now, that doesn't make a great deal of sense, until you listen to this. When they saw the star, they rejoiced with exceeding great joy. Now, there's a tradition which relates how that in their difficulty in the way from Jerusalem, after talking with Herod, to find the actual spot under the zenith, these magi sat down beside David's well of Bethlehem to refresh themselves. They looked down as they were going to gather the water in midday, and looked down, they saw the reflection of the star perfectly aligned as a zenith, because it was a deep well. And when they saw the star in the well that was right outside the point in which Christ was born, they blew their top.
That's the same thing that happened with the pyramid.
Where's that come from?
What?
That's a tradition.
Well, it's been repeated by no one can say they. I mean, it's one of those things that's been a story in the church, in the ancient church, forever.
That's wild.
It's the same as a pyramid.
Same as a pyramid. That's why I believe it.
It
So the reason Herod and Seven want to know what time the star appeared is that would give him the time of the birth.
Right. So.
What does it look like when it hits?
Well, no, it has to be. They look. Jacob's. You got to read David. Read about David's well in Bethlehem, which is wild stories about it. But anyway, it's a well. It's a straight down well, and they look down in the well, and it's a bright star because it's a new star. And so they look down, and they're going to get a drink of water.
It wasn't straight above, and you couldn't see it.
It has to be straight above at the zenith. So it defined the zenith. The well defined the zenith.
So when these guys walked in the door, they then provided Mary two witnesses, yeah, and they provided Joseph two witnesses.
Yeah.
Okay, so, yeah.
But my point to you is if it wasn't for the Sphinx, none of this would have been possible. They couldn't have started. They wouldn't know where to start the mystery on this. Because we've just covered 1/30. What we've done today is cover 1/36th of what we're going to talk about.
Now, they didn't know about the third witness, which was the Sphinx.
They may have very well.
Well, if they.
They'd known about the pyramid.
The pyramid.
Right.
The pyramid goes through Bethlehem and also gives the time.
Right.
Over.
The pyramid, well, no, the pyramid aligned on the east-west axis, corrected for the Christ angle, goes directly through Jerusalem, through Bethlehem, and gives the exact, when that point is lined up with a point in Bethlehem, it gives us the 29 BC, 29 September 2 BC. Okay? But I love the story about the David's well in Bethlehem. Now, Chrysostom, you remember when we read about Chrysostom? Chrysostom is the one whose Passover homily that we've read a few times. They just translated it in the last few years. They just found it. Well, he's the last one that we know of that it ever did the three-year cycle with a group of people.
Did he do it in 3 years?
Probably not. Shut up. He speaks in his writings of the star's surprising brightness. Ignatius, who was the bishop of Antioch in AD 69, he said, quote, at the appearance of the Lord, a star shone forth brighter than all the other stars. And he was in AD 69, so I mean, there would have easily been eyewitnesses that he would have reported that to him. And then a guy named Prudentius from the 4th century said, not even the morning star was so fair. Huh? Well, it's part of the coma. It's part of...
I mean, is it still... Can you show it to me now?
Well, I can only speculate, but I would guess it's the one that's... Yeah. I would guess, yeah. It's probably the star that's this star right here that's at the top of the baby. It's the top of the baby's head. I mean, that's my speculation. I don't know that I just, this stuff is very, you know, I mean, it's.
How do you know if it was there then and it faded away?
Oh, no, it wouldn't have been there. It would have been, when a star, the idea of a new star, there's a brilliance of light for a period, and then it, but that is the very, we just barely scratched the surface. This was Sphinx, this was remedial Sphinx. Okay? Now, When we get down to the details, every member of the tribe, the 12 sons of Jacob, and each tribe and their leader, had one of the signs of the zodiac on their staff. Now, all of the cherubim and the strange scriptures in Revelation and in Ezekiel about the thing with the face of this and this and this, all refer to these signs of the zodiac, which it's impossible to understand if you don't know about this stuff. But this stuff, you know, it sounds like weirdo stuff to us, but it was first grade stuff back then to Jesus and the disciples, they all knew it. Because that's, I mean, imagine.
Be like us talking about television.
But remember, first of all, they were in the desert. They were away from lights. So the brightness of the stars is so intense that it's 1,000 times different than you're looking here. Second of all, there was no twilight in the desert. The reason there's twilight is because of the humidity in the air. So it was light and it was immediately dark within like 3 minutes. And we're talking dark. Okay, now they're out there in the desert, and as Harry was saying, it's like watching the Omni Theater every night. But in this procession of the sun through these constellations, it was the mystery of the universe that they could watch and be told of. That as the sun, it was born a virgin, it suffered. We'll see all the stuff that he went through in the signs of the zodiac. And they could watch that procession, and it would be the greatest TV show and the biggest screen and the. That's why they didn't need drama in ancient. They had the greatest drama, the biggest screen, best cameraman.
Now we know what the disciples did
in 93. Right, they laid there and looked at the stars. But in knowledge, can you imagine what joy it would be to be able to see and recognize each one of these constellations and look up and be able to talk about it and relate it to your children? And see the witness written in the stars. Okay, we're going to go to two more scriptures, then we'll quit. Romans 10. Kids love this stuff. I mean, look at you. But little kids really love it. Romans 10, verse... 14. How then shall they call on him in whom they have not believed? And how shall they believe in him of whom they have not heard? And how shall they hear without a preacher? Okay, now this is the justification for all the bullshit that's done in the name of Christ. And how shall they preach except they be sent? As it is written, how beautiful are the feet of them that preach the gospel of peace and bring glad tidings of good things. But they have not all obeyed the gospel. For Isaiah saith, Lord, who hath believed our report? So then faith cometh by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. But I say, have they not heard? Yes, verily. He's talking about the whole human race now. Their sound went into all the earth, and their words unto the ends of the world. What's he talking about? See, preaching isn't just... I mean, the stars are preaching. It's their sounds and their words that are unto the end of the earth. Now go to Psalm 19. Okay, before you go there, keep your finger in Psalms, you won't mind. And go to Isaiah 40. Verse 15. Behold, the nations are as a drop of a bucket and are counted as the small dust of the balance. Now, the small dust of the balance is after everything has been weighed and stuff, and there's some little gunk sticking around. So he's saying all the nations of the world are as that little gunky dust. Behold, he taketh up the isles is a very small thing, a very little thing, and Lebanon is not sufficient to burn, nor the beast thereof sufficient for a burnt offering. All nations before him are as nothing, and they are counted to him less than nothing and vanity. Oh no, but God loves us. Right. To whom then will you liken God? Or what likeness will you compare unto him? The workman melteth a graven image, and the goldsmith spreadeth it over with gold. Spreadeth it over with gold, and casteth silver chains. He that is so impoverished that he hath no oblation chooseth a tree that will not rot. And he seeketh unto him a cunning workman to prepare a graven image that shall not be moved. Have you not known? Have you not heard? Hath it not been told unto you from the beginning? Have you not understood from the foundations of the earth? It is he that sitteth upon the circle of the earth. Now the circle of the earth is talking directly about the circuit that the earth makes through the constellations. What does he see when he looks up there? The inhabitants thereof are as grasshoppers, that stretcheth out the heavens as a curtain, and spreadeth them out as a tent to dwell in. Okay, now, you see that? The circle of the earth is the circle through the heavens that's made by the earth's and the sun's transversing the 12 signs of the zodiac.
Giant driving dude.
Right. Okay, now back to Psalm. Psalm 19. The heavens declare. Now, declare means, it's saying, the heavens preach, express, say the glory of God. And what is the glory of God? The glory of God is Christ in you, the hope of glory. That's why the universe was made. And the firmament showeth his handiwork. Now the firmament, they're talking not this earth. The firmament is the same firmament which is the heavens. Day unto day uttereth speech. The heavens are uttering speech. And night unto night showeth knowledge. There is no speech nor language where their voice is not heard. Their line is gone out through all the earth. Their line is gone out through all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. In them hath he set a tabernacle for the sun, which is as a bridegroom coming out of his chamber. That's what it shows. Now go to Job 38. Okay. There's it's really a neat chapter. If you haven't read it, you ought to. But start in verse 31. Canst thou bind the sweet influence? He's challenging Job. Remember where Job? He's saying, canst thou bind the sweet influences of Pleiades? And you remember the Pleiades are the alignment for the pyramid, along with the dragon star. Or loose the bands of Orion. Now wait till we get to Orion. Orion's going to blow your socks off. Every time you see those three stars up there from now on, you're going to get blown away. But we have to wait to that, because I don't feel like talking about that right now. Canst thou bring forth Masoreth in his season? Now Masoreth is the Hebrew word for the 12 signs of the zodiac. Okay, now the question is, he's challenging Job, can you bring forth the reason that the 12 signs exist in their season? Can you bring forth the mystery of God? Or can thou guide Arcturus with his sons? Now that's another, we'll get into that one in a minute. It has to do with the planets. But knowest thou the ordinances of heaven? Can thou set the dominion thereof in the earth? In this earthen vessel. The Lord's Prayer again. Thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven. Not on earth, in. So, my point to you that I want you to see is when you look at the stars, they're showing forth a mystery. And the reason those stars exist is to show you yourself. Because you're in you. Is Christ in you, the hope of glory. Whenever you see the word glory, the idea is the end result of the plan of God. Them who he justified, them he also glorified. You. It's done. Okay? Take a big guy.